here on 20 meters, and it's fine. It's on 40, where if I leave both antenna tuners out of the circuit, I'm only getting something like, according to the MFJ meter, 20 to 30 watts out. That's all I'm getting, and nobody's going to hear me. The other night, I think I said, I listened to a guy from Quebec who was 10 over, and he couldn't hear me at all. So something's going on where on 40 meters, the loop's just not working as it was. I don't want to, I won't get into any more, because it was working better before the motor got hooked up, and I know the motor has nothing to do with it, but it originally was working a little better on 40, but now it's marginal. Anyway, I don't have any, I have a coupler between the motor and the capacitor without any insulation between the two. I'm wondering if that could be, you know, that could hurt the situation also. If I don't have any separation between the motor and the capacitor electrically. Go ahead, Roy.
Yes. I think that's Wesley, so Wesley recognized, but let me throw in my two cents worth. Number one, I think you definitely should electrically isolate the stepper motor from your variable capacitor. That's number one. That might be causing the problem. Or else it is within the realm of possibilities that the motor, the inductors of the motor are so massive that they're coupling with your magnetic loop and that's de-resonating it. Because you're telling me that with the same variable capacitor, you're able to get closer to a one-to-one than when you introduce the big, bulkier stepper motor. So my surmise, that is not really affected the capacitance, but is coupling to the antenna. So at the very least, I would suggest that you find some means of coupling the stepper motor to the variable capacitor that uses an insulator. And if that doesn't help you, consider shielding your stepper motor in some way so that maybe it would couple less and you might get a better visual. Wes, you wanted to say something?
No, that wasn't me.
If it may, AFCC. Wanted to say something, please hit that push to talk.
AF2P, got it. Am I on? Do I have it?
Yes, you have it.
Thank you, name is Ed. On a magnetic loop, that motor, the size of the motor, it's going to have some capacitance to the loop. Physically mounted, I'm assuming it's mounted up close. I know when I had the magnetic loop, I did have to isolate. You can't, you've got to physically, like a some kind of rubber bushing, something between the shaft of the motor and the shaft of the capacitor. That's one thing. The other thing is, one of the things that was not adequately addressed, but there's another factor, is having two tuners at the same time, auto tuners. The magnetic loop, very often, he's got a stepper motor on it, and very often that can be an automatic setup. You never, the ham radio mythology is that the world will blow up if you have two auto tuners on a transmission line transmitting. Now, of course, we know that's not necessarily true, but yes, if you've got two auto tuners, you can have a problem. And that is another factor which may have caused people to say you can't have a tuner between the rig and the magnetic loop. The magnetic loop, the nature of that thing is it is a tuner. The loop itself is a tuner.
Ed, you seem to be dropping in and out of the repeater.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I got a microphone problem. Let me go back to listening. AF2P.
Okay, Ed. Just to address, I think it's no one, hopefully, tells people that their rig will explode. What people tend to caution people when they're trying to get that last ounce of impedance transformation by putting two auto-tune antenna tuners together is you might get into some kind of a semi-ridiculous point where the two of them don't know who's the leader and who's the follower, and you'll have them auto-tuning all over the place forever and ever and ever. So I think that's the rational reason why it's not a particularly great idea to have two auto-tuning antenna tuners in series with each other. It's best to get one that's capable of accomplishing impedance transformation that you require without doubling up. But that's a sort of a different situation, again, when it comes to a magnetic loop in which you have a situation of a ridiculously low radiation resistance and the inefficiencies of that design. So they're not equivalent to each other. There are different reasonably good reasons for behavior.
I'm going to try everybody's suggestion on isolate the motor.
There are comments out there. Please feel free.
And I need to make sure that the leads from the capacitor to the loop are, you know, as robust and short as possible, and I will report back.
Okay, very good, Rich. Again, wish you luck, and I'm sure you'll come back and tell us how it all turned out. Again, the lower the resistance between the two things, the better. Unfortunately, most people's volt ohmmeters don't have a fine enough adjustment to discern significant differences between insertion losses of reasonably good contacts between components. You would need something that measured, you know, micro-ohms and such, milli-ohms. But I wish you luck, Rich, and we'll hear about this later on, I'm sure.
Comment.
Yes, please, comment.
K2GJE. A little change in subject. I don't believe these so-called power meters are reading anything. This is why. Most of them are just voltmeters that have a scale calibrated in watts. The only way you're going to read watts is E squared over R with a known fixed R. Then you could read watts if you measure voltage or I squared R. But it's easier to read E squared over R. Or when I worked in a lab, we had, I think they called it a calorimetric watt meter. It actually measured the amount of heat that the RF was developing. I don't believe in any of these so-called watt meters. True what's happening out there is a directional coupler. It's telling you what's going up the line and what's coming down the line. And you want to tune whatever you're tuning for, of course, the least amount coming down the line. I don't think antenna tuners are that inefficient. Yes, they must have some inefficiency. The only time I really saw some good antenna tuners was when I was in the service. They had vacuum capacitors and very large silver-plated inductors. I'm probably on too long. Over.
I agree with you entirely, and we kind of discussed it a couple of months ago. Our own John Casey to SHO came by and mentioned the Bird watt meter manual, the instructions of mining the distance in the transmission line, and we discussed how watt meters were a little more than galvanometers that made assumptions about loads and inferred power based on 50 ohms of resistance, and that it's a compromised measurement device. And so, you know, that certainly is understandable, but, you know, you use what you got. We can't really use calorimeters, or most of us can't, They tend to be rather expensive. They're much more accurate, certainly, but we use rough approximations. You know, people have heard watt meters and love them, and there are loads of different designs of watt meters. So it gives you a vague idea of what's going forward, and if it's built reversible, you can also see what's reversing, but you can't. You're also kind of inferring things when you see that there's no reflected power. You could say that it's a perfect match because there's no reflected power, but if you happen to have something on your transmission line that soaks up most of your power, both forward and reverse, then you'll go to the incorrect conclusion that you have a relatively perfect match.
True. What's going up the line to the antenna, and based on how long that coax is, there is some loss. And when there is any SWR at all, the reflected power comes down and has the loss of the line. And when the antenna tuner corrects its phase and it goes back up the line several times, it again has loss every time. It's a very complicated situation. His best test might be when he does make a contact and ask the person, this is with the antenna tuner, this is without the antenna tuner, and what does your rig tell me, over?
I agree 100% with you, and the thing that concerns me a little bit is the additional information we learned later on, that the configuration without a servo, which isn't part of the electrical design of the magnetic loop itself, it's just a functional component, seems to shift his SWR from something close to 1-to-1 to 2-to-1. So that's a curiosity. There's something coupling there, obviously, that needs to not be coupled. You have enough losses with magnetic loops. Having something either inductively or capacitively coupling with a magnetic loop is never going to be a good thing. It's always going to be to the magnetic loop's detriment.
They do make insulated couplings. Maybe this is what he has to charge up someplace to get that motor out of the picture, so it's just the variable capacitor that's doing everything. That's my two cents for tonight. Over, back to that.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I am sure that it's doable to get an insulated coupler. I hope that that's the solution, because that's a much simpler one than figuring out how to shield the coils wrapped in a bigger servo separate type of a motor. So if you could swap it for some nice Teflon or what have you, insulated mechanical coupling devices, and that would be probably, if that solves your problem, then that would be a lot easier to do than electrically shielding the coils of the stepper motor from the magnetic loop that also might be something that's happening. Anyway, anyone else with any comments before we move on?
KC2FRJ.
Yeah, FRJ.
Hi, the name is Harry. Here's just a wild thought. To couple the stepper to the capacitor on the antenna, you could clamp a wooden dowel at both ends. One end clamp it onto the capacitor, the other end clamp it onto the stepper motor. And that solves that connection. And the other thought is surround the stepper motor in a little Faraday cage. Put it inside a grounded steel box.
Yeah, thank you, Harry. Yeah, I agree. You could use a wooden dowel. There are plastic materials that are hollowed out that would serve the same type of a purpose. And yeah, I was thinking in terms of caging your motor. I would first try the insulated coupler, see if that solves the problem. But if it doesn't, you would either need to lengthen the distance between the stepper motor and then lengthen the coupler, or consider something like a Faraday cage as Harry mentioned.
What influence does the stepper motor have on the capacitor if it's connected directly?
Well, I mean, you now have a device that is basically a glorified inductor. Motors are pieces of coiled wire. And if you have a coiled wire and it's coupled electrically, your capacitor is going to interact with it and change its capacitor.
But I'm not, I detached the motor, completely from the capacitor and didn't notice any change whatsoever in SWR.
Okay, so that leads us to step B, which is that this particular motor has so much inductance in it that it may very well be coupling with your magnetic loop. The proximity of the motor to the magnetic loop might be a factor. Now, when you detach the stepper motor from the capacitor, I assume you keep it in position. You might want to experiment by taking the stepper motor and moving it, 6 to 8 feet away and see if the stepper motor's closeness to the magnetic loop is having this effect.
Yes, I could try that too. It's a relatively small stepper motor. You know, these things aren't that big, but who knows? It could be influencing it in a couple of ways. I will try to do that. I will take the motor completely off. And by the way, on my other capacitor for the higher bands, I was using a wooden dowel between the stepper motor and the capacitor. So whoever suggested that, I have been doing that already. So I'll try to totally take the stepper motor away and see what happens with that, guys. Thanks a lot. Back to Roy.
Okay, you're welcome, Rich. As far as I can tell, the way that you described things was that you were able to get close to a one-to-one SWR using the new capacitor with the old stepper motor. The problem with the old stepper motor was that it wasn't quite capable of enough torque, and so it would lose a couple of steps on the way. So I would find it confusing that the old configuration would give you close to one-to-one, and the lack of a stepper motor would detune your magnetic loop beyond what it was doing with the smaller stepper motor. But try these things out and come back and tell us, and we'd all like to be informed and educated.
I will. It wasn't a one-to-one. I don't think I said that, but it was 1.5-to-1 rather than a 2-to-1. So that did make a difference. I'll come back next week. I'll try all this stuff. And thanks again, everybody. Back to net.
Okay. You're welcome, Rich. Yeah, I mean, certainly I would rather have a 1.5 than a 2-to-1. You could get by much more. The amount of loss between the mismatches is not that much of a problem. So you have to address why it changed from 1.5 to 2.0. Anyway, anyone with any closing comments before we move on to the next person?
UB2BX, though.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, first of all, I've worked the world on 40-meters with antennas that have had a 2-to-1 SWR and even higher. So I don't know that that's necessarily the problem. So it's not near as bad as it used to be. 40 meters is a very noisy band, particularly at night. And I've had it happen many times. The guy who was very loud just didn't hear me, especially when I was using 100 watts or so output to a relatively poor antenna. If you've only called one loud station and had that happen, that doesn't necessarily mean, Rich, that your station isn't working. One thing, Rich, if you have the ability to use digital mode or CW, on CW, to find a clear spot lower in the bend, do a CQDX and look at rbn.org and see where your signal is being received. That'll tell you whether you're getting out of it all. If you have FT8 or whisper capability, and possibly some other modes also, PSK obviously, you can put out a signal and look at PSK reporter to see where your signal is being seen and heard, so to speak, and get a more objective idea. You know, sometimes on the digital modes, I find on PSK reporter stations with good antennas will sometimes pick you up in locations where you're not going to be able to make a contact at that time of day. I've noticed that. Anyway, that's my two cents, WB2BX, though.
So. Okay, Frank, those are all good suggestions. It sort of really depends upon your transmitter and the situation. There are transmitters that are more tolerant than others. I mentioned before, my Expert Systems linear amplifier, if I feed it a load that has anything greater than, I think, a 1.6 to 1 SWR, it'll scream bloody murder and go into bypass mode. So, you know, some transmitters are kind of heavy-handed and some are light. 2-to-1 VizWatt doesn't really introduce that much of a reflected loss. So, you know, you could use it. But if you happen to have a radio system that's set to default at a better SWR and cut the power down, then you're really stuck. So it sort of depends on what transmitter you're using, whether you can operate 2.0 SWR or not.
DDH with a comment.
Yeah, sure, John.
Yeah, actually, look at the numbers. A 2-to-1 SWR, let's like say that would be like a 100-ohm resistor on 50-ohm line. 2-to-1 SWR has a reflection coefficient of about a third. The power reflection coefficient is a ninth. So that means you're reflecting about 11% of your power. So you're not really, I should say, as far as the reflection is concerned at that SWR, not a heck of a lot. Of course, as you mentioned, the line loss then comes in effect when you start correcting it. But.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, John. It's not insurmountable. It's certainly tolerable, unless you happen to be fortunate enough to have something like my little Expert System. I've passed by 1.6, and it gets very, very angry at me. So it depends on your system. Even though it's I agree with you, it certainly is technically doable. Whether the intelligent electronics that we now own will let us do things intelligent, that's another question.
Yeah, things are just getting too smart. Hi.
Yes, indeed. I have come across so many smart and their quotes chips. They put them in all kinds of things, and they occasionally drive me mildly insane. So. But you got to live in this modern world, so you have to factor that into the equation.
I know there's a smart coffee maker that orders beans when you run out. I could order my own coffee beans.
I think that was the scam that they used to use for the Internet of Things refrigerators, usually Korean designs. They love to implement with computers and displays, and they're capable of scanning products, and they can tell you when your milk is going bad just by the Best Buy date, and I guess they can order you new cartons of milk. Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I'm still not that thrilled with machines that listen to me talk and talk back at me for whatever reason. I don't find that convenient for me. I tend to not want to talk to an inanimate object, I guess.
I know people who have had to put Alexa in the closet, literally, because would actually be listening and commenting and probably worse, reporting things to some unknown source.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a problem of our modern age. I try to remember to turn Siri off on all my devices because inevitably I'm watching something on the television and it's close enough to, hey, Siri, I guess, to trigger it, and it starts to have a conversation with my TV set, which is never a very productive situation.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Okay,
yes, Wesley?
I'm wondering if there is anybody online that has something on ham radio.
Yes, Jim is next, but he's the only person next. So after we do Jim, I'll put you in for a question or a comment. How's that, Wes?
Beautiful, thank you.
Okay, I assume we've talked this out. I'll ask one last time. If anyone has any closing comments before we move on, now's the time to express them.
Roy, your signal sounds better tonight than it has in a long time. Did you do anything different?
Absolutely, positively nothing. It's the sheer vagaries of the Lymark repeater in Glen Oaks, I'm afraid. Anyway, I will assume that means that no one has any further comments. So we move on to Jim, KD2VHD. What's your question or comment for tonight, Jim?
Roy, my question is more related to revisiting some stuff on the sub last week and some of the repercussions of that episode. So if Wesley has a ham radio question, I suggest you put him ahead.
Okay, Jim, we're all very polite gentlemen here. So, Wesley, you're on.
Thank you very much. Hey. About a month ago, I started digging something that looks strange, but it was actually in the field of my application. I'm in the VLF, so all of the stuff for very low frequency is interesting to me. So two weeks ago, I was talking, and you actually were kind of surprised. Why did I brought the subject on this into this fine group of people, which was the communication over the 500 kilovolts electric line and the monitoring what they have. And then I got into the company called Signalcraft, Signalcrafter, right. And I purchased about 5 instruments from them. It's not from them, because they are very expensive. So selective voltmeter and a signal source, which could be a very good transmitter for VLF, and SWR meter from 20 hertz to 500 kilohertz. And some of the matching transformers and stuff, they have a bridge to use. The company still survives. I don't believe they're going to belong in the market. But then today, while I was listening to you guys, I got into the Model Terry of Signal Crafters. I remember years ago there was a big hollow, a big something on ham radio plenty of other ham radio forums about Model Terry. And I remember there was a video about Model Terry 3.0, and I didn't know what exactly is so special about it. Well, it was Signal Crafters. There is in East Hanover in New Jersey. I spoke to the guy. I didn't talk about this model. It was 1980. 1980, everybody of you guys were probably very young and very happy in life and whatsoever. We had a good time in America. So, it is a SWR power meter, and I'm going to read a little bit about it. The analog, built analog computer operates over a power range only from 1 watt to several kilowatts with unparalleled accuracy. It is auto-ranging from 0 to 20, 0 to 200, 0 to 2,000 and more. But it has a coaxial relay. And I remember that there was so many guys talking about, if you got your hands on it, it is a treasure. And today when I was listening to you, I found some other information about it. I was under the impression that most of the directional couplers are in the frequency from 140 megahertz up. But those guys, they made directional couplers that work from the frequency from 30 megahertz down, very much down. And they had, they say, a wide range of impedances, power ratings, and frequency operation available section in directional couplers product line. So, what I would like to suggest is, I see the picture, you can Google it, Signal Crafter or Signal Crafters Model 30. So it's like a Rolls Royce right now for everybody, I don't believe that you can. If you look at the back of it, there is that a directional coupler mounted at the back of it, allowing you to connect that in and out. Absolutely amazing. And they don't make it any longer. They switched from that. So they were somewhere in Kansas, they moved to New Jersey, they were having a good time there, and good prosperity there. They moved to the electrical power lines and the communication over the power lines. They were able to build the whole line of the 50 ohm, 75 ohm, 300 ohm, and 600 ohm measuring devices that operate over the 500 kilowatts electrical lines from peer to peer, and they are able to monitor the traps. The trap is the resonant circuit that is preventing that a frequency that is being used for communication to get into the high voltage transformers and eventually mess up with it. So now I have a set of the devices that are able to measure SWR from frequencies from 20 hertz, 20 hertz, up to 500 kilohertz, I didn't know that they are in ham radio. When I spoke to the owner, the older guy, he said, I'm 45 years. I'm only 45 years here. So probably he is the son of the previous owner or whatever, but anyhow, I didn't ask him about that Model 30 because I had no idea that they were. I asked him, are you ham? He didn't respond to that. Probably he didn't hear that. So I think I'm gonna pay the visit on him. I have their highest product, which is the Model 110, which is the SSVM, that's the selective voltmeter with the oscillator receiver that is able to receive SS. And it allows me to go with LNB, UL, just a moment. Hold on. Okay, so it gives me AM, DSB, and LSB, and USB. Now, question, what is do you know what is DSB, Dr. Roy?
A dual sideband.
That is correct. So, they have a built-in dual sideband. Of course, that receiver, among many receivers that I have, let me switch it off. This receiver works only from 20 hertz up to 500 kilohertz. It does have SWR meter built-in. It has the liquid the LCD display, about 9 inches, and all of the operation of the voltmeter on the particular frequency could be performed, measuring the power as well, and it does have a built-in calculator. That means you can go to the calculator if you want that data to be automatically put into from the device. It could, but you can eventually manually put all of the information, and it calculates you the SWR power, reflected power, the impedance of the line. So let's say you have the 500 kilowatts high voltage line. It's gonna tell you how many ohms it does have. Now, how they were able to tune from 50 ohms to the unknown to me power line that has unknown to me impedance, and get from the other side the impedance that is matching the device that is actually working with it. So it's kind of fascinating story. And possibly the application for ham radio operators, especially those using a high power or high voltages, like the magnetic loop, would be that this device doesn't care about 200 volts or 300 volts or 500 volts. You can connect it. It does have the internal attenuator, and that internal attenuator is about 20 kilo ohms, if you wish, but you can connect their attenuated, especially made for 220 volts, if you want to check impedance of your power line, of your line in your socket, electric receptacle. So it's really, really kind of fascinating. N2XG.
AC2GS. Are you talking about signal crafters?
You got me those signal crafters. What do you mean?
Oh, okay. I was trying to look up whatever what you were talking about, and the only thing I came up with was a company called Signal Crafter, because I don't know what product you're talking about. You didn't send me any email about it, so I have no lead time.
Oh, yeah. I didn't hear what you said. Yes, Signal Crafters. So here is Signal Crafters, or Signal Crafter without S. So put Model Terry, Signal Crafters Model Terry, and then switch, and then probably you're going to see the picture immediately, or you can switch to the pictures, and it's going to show you that device.
Yeah, it's Signal Crafters with an S. I have the manual up on one of my screens. And just by the way, I don't recall asking you what the your power utility frequency filters had to do with ham radio. Someone might have asked that during the TechNet, but I certainly didn't.
Okay, ham radio operators could operate with the equipment and the frequencies from very high to very low. There is a group of ham radio operators who says, I had my fun with HF, but I want to go lower. But if you're dealing with the high voltages and unknown impedances of two wires, which we would say that the two wires cable, BX cable that is in your wall, connected to your outlet has a certain impedance, but you have no idea what impedance is that, right? And you want to find out what is the dependency, frequency versus impedance. How sensitive is the line or say the transmission line based on lower frequencies? So the lower frequency, the less requirement to match the impedance. The higher the frequency, the more it is. So if you want to play with those things, that it is absolutely amazing to have a device that could do it. And those devices are being used by the electricians, but not by the electricians doing the electrical installation in your house, but by the electricians that work in the big power lines between the cities or between the piers. And they have to connect that receiver that I have with me, or the Model 70, or the Model 30. The Model 30 is actually able to measure the impedance from few ohms up to 40,000 ohms. If I remember correctly. So, if you want to match your antenna, which actually is very difficult to match, let me drop. For frequency 123 kilohertz, if I remember, or 137 kilohertz, the ham radio band, or for the frequency 17.2 kilohertz, which is allowed in some countries to have a ham radio operations on it. You need to know to match the antenna to the transmission line and the transmission line to your transmitter. And your transmitter is 50 ohm. So signal crafters made a signal source which is like a transmitter. It has 50 ohm, it has 75 ohm, it has 300 ohm, and it has 600 ohm. You can actually send a signal of a random piece of wire or two wires, treating it as the transmission line, connect something to it, and make sure that you have a perfect match and perfect SWR. But the striking is that this company was making hold on. Okay, yes, I'm here. The directional copper is not supplied with model 30 because the 30 the SWR for ham radio operators because of wide range of the impedances, power ratings, and frequency of operation available to your section. Appropriate directional coupler could be selected at the time of ordering from Signal Crafters catalog accessories. So when you buy for your ham radio operation that Rolls Royce, that Beauty, it probably has already mounted at the back the proper directional coupler. But they make directional couplers on lower frequency too. So how that was built? I mean, there is nothing special about 2 meters or 4 meters or 80 centimeters or 1.2 megahertz directional coupler. I remember Dick once said that directional couplers, even though they are rated in gigahertz, they work very low as well. But I never knew how low they could go. Maybe you do. Back to you.
I don't specifically know. It was my understanding that the higher frequencies were more accurate, that if you took something rated for a high frequency and you used a lower frequency, you could put out an equivalent measurement if you have a known calibration of the output signals so that you could use them for lower frequencies, but you couldn't necessarily use them for higher frequencies because it would be a nonlinear relationship at that point.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, as you get lower and lower in frequency, the directional couplers are not made with transmission lines, because down there at those frequencies it would be huge. But the directional couplers, they're made more with transformers. We are actually using the phasing of the transformers to cause cancellation of a signal in one direction versus another. Go ahead.
Oh, that is very interesting. Could you say more about it? So you have a transformer, and?
Yeah, okay. So, you know what's a good example? In a telephone, when you speak into the microphone, you notice you don't hear the signal coming out of the headphone. Okay? There is a kind of directional coupler in there. It actually causes a cancellation of the signal, so you don't hear your own voice in the headphone as loud as it is going out over the phone. So when you get down to low frequencies, you can build directional couplers using the phasing of transformers, where by the proper winding and phasing of them, you can get the signal to cancel in one direction and to reinforce in the other direction. When you get up higher in frequency, then directional couplers start becoming practical using transmission lines. Like when you're up at a couple of gigahertz, of course, then it's done with transmission lines. But at those very low frequencies, they do that with transformers.
I was looking at a bag of that unit, Model Terry, and it looks like that the directional coupler is very small there. There are few coaxial relays automatically switched, and it wasn't digital. That was 1980. They say it's an analog computer. Well, they call it that way. Analog computer. Right. Oh, they even gave the model. Model HF231, directional coupler. Measures RF power up to 2,000 watts on 52-ohm coaxial lines and covers frequency from 1H to 30 megahertz. For 75-ohm lines, you would need model HF231A directional coupler. You have need for VHF as well as HF capability or more sensitivity in the HF range for QRP operation. Please refer to Signal Crafters catalog brochure covering the full line of directional couplers available for use with model 30. So it was like, it was something that nobody makes any longer. There is a video on YouTube. I recall it. That was probably 10 years ago when I saw that video. And plenty of comments on it, on this model Terry, where to get it. The last one was sold on Ham Radio forum. I'm trying to get there. I think I don't have it open. A few years ago. Right. Oh, you got that manual, right, for it. Yeah. So, my suggestion is to see if you want to have something unique. Oh, yeah. On page 11, Dr. Roy. Page 11, you have that directional coupler. Do you see it?
All I have on my screen is the manual for the Model 30.
Right. In this manual, go down to the page number 11. It's quite unique, and it looks like this coupler is mounted with the two screws that you can screw with your hands. So it's like interchangeable. So you have a one SWR meter from 1980. That could be used for HF, VHF, UHF, high power, low power, anything you want. Page 11.
Yeah, I see it. How accurate is it rated to be?
It's from 1 watt to 2 kilowatts, the basic. So I assume the and it will be used for QRP too. So I assume it it gives you about one watt accuracy. But I didn't read that.
Yeah, it's never a good idea to assume because, you know, even the lovely bird watt meter has a different accuracy depending upon each plug's range of powers. By the way, I looked up bird watt meter couplers. They go as far down as 2 megahertz as far as frequency is concerned. So that's kind of important, the accuracy. Is it the same for everything or different for different frequencies? As often these watt meters tend to be optimized for some place in the middle, and they get a little vaguer and vaguer as you take them to the extremes.
On the article from 1980, it says auto ranging future automatically selects proper range from 0 to 20, 0 to 200, 0 to 2000. Was according to the RF level detected on the transmission line and indicates the proper range on one of three front panel LEDs. The operator can assume manual control of that future by selecting one of three basic ranges, but of course it's automatic. Here it doesn't say about accuracy, but I assume that it should be in the manual. I'm gonna quickly look at it. And I have, oh yeah, Hamnet, ham.net. If you go to ham.net and type Signal Crafters Model 3.0, you're gonna see the picture of it. For 1980, it was looking beautiful. Now, how good this device is? I have so far five of the instruments, or probably the whole line of the instruments for Signal Crafters. All of them could be used for any two wires to be treated as a transmission line. And I want to have a FITOM. And I need to match it with the antenna. Now, making antenna for a kilohertz range is not easy. And they are some kind of compromise, but you need to match the impedance for it. And those devices were made specially for the electrical power companies. To maintain their duties, so, and they were selling for years. Receiver that I have, the model 110, was manufactured in 2005. So still, that was not that old. I have plenty of devices from 2005 and older. And so I believe it's pretty accurate, but it takes probably a few minutes just to look at it and see what is the accuracy for it.
Okay, AC2GS, by the way. According to the manual back in 1980, the accuracy is rated at plus or minus 6% at full scale at a 1-to-1 SWR.
Okay. So 6%. So you have 60 watts? Well, Does anybody know the modern SWR meters? What is the accuracy of because this one is not only giving you SWR, it's giving you SWR and power together. Maybe you, Dr. Roy, you have probably one of the modern meters. Can you say about the accuracy of yours?
Well, I believe bird watt meters, which is still a kind of a nice standard, is plus or minus 5% at full scale. So bird watt meters are supposedly ever so slightly more accurate than this one.
So instead of paying $200 for the plug for the bird meter, we could have this device, no plugs required, and we have a whole coverage for all the bands from 1.8 to 10 meters, respectively.
Okay, well, I don't know. I mean, all I have to do is purchase three or four plugs, and I kind of cover HF entirely. So, I don't know. I guess ultimately it depends upon the frequencies that interest you. You know, I have rather mundane HF, UHF, VHF interest. So, you know, my plugs work for me. But, you know, I could certainly understand why you would covet a nice device like that.
It is like everybody can have a Toyota. But if you go to S-Class Mercedes, it's much more expensive. But if you go even to more expensive, then you're paying plenty of money. Now, this is inexpensive. This is a Rolls-Royce. It's still working. It was made in 1980s. It was sold in thousands. And it's still there in the hands of ham radio operators, and they still say it's a good stuff. We can't buy something like that now because it's too expensive for production of it. I may call the guy and ask if he has a sample of it. If he has that old stuff, or he knows how to get it. I know they don't make it any longer. They switched to real money. Working with power companies was really what they were doing for many years. But they started with ham radio. Enter exit.
I guess so, Wesley. You know, it depends on what floats your boat. I mean, you could get a state-of-the-art, most expensive car from 1920, and some people would love to have one, and most people wouldn't know what the heck to do with it. You know, what do you do with the crank? I have something called an LP500 digital station monitor. It has couplers. It gives me the peak output power, average power. It gives me the audio envelope. It even will give me the linearity of my linear amplifier. I hook one coupler to the output of the transmitter and one to the output of the linear amplifier, and it produces a visual trapezoid signal to show me the linearity. I like this. It's a visual display. It doesn't operate for all frequencies. It requires different couplers. I have a VHF. I think it's a VHF coupler, and I have an HF coupler. It serves my purpose. It looks nice, and it amuses me. And it shows up on my computer screen, which is always a plus.
So everything that you said is in that model of 1980. And it does have another two buttons, which is dummy load A and dummy load A1 and A2. So it does have a peak averaging auto range. And a question to you. You have also ability to connect to two dummy loads?
This is a digital LCD watt meter. It doesn't inherently have any ability to connect to dummy loads. I can connect to dummy loads using my antenna tuners, which have a switch to go in line, go to the antenna tuner, or feed it directly to a dummy load. So I don't really need my watt meter to be switchable for internally to dummy loads. If anything, it would kind of complicate my system.
In old days, they thought that having one small thing on your table and being able to tune your radio instead of tuning it online, per se, tune it to dummy load and then switch it. What did they made it so it could have a two dummy loads? That's interesting. Anyhow, comparing to today's technology, this thing had everything and even more. Enter XGA.
Okay, but once again, how would you put the screen onto my computer?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. If that is what you want, and that is what makes you happy, Right. There was no computer at that time, and they didn't think about it. And later they decided to make real money instead of that. But that's how American business started. I would love to have it. But anyhow, the whole story, the whole talking is not about this device. It's just an example. How many guys on this